The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Over the past several years, in various Central and Eastern European and Central Asian countries, undemocratic governments have configured and systematically intensified their approaches to restrict civil society, including in the areas of drugs, harm reduction, and HIV services, as well as an advocacy for evidence-based health and drug policies. The Eurasian Harm Reduction Association recently hosted a discussion on these topics entitled Tenacity in the Shrinking Civic Spaces, Challenges and Response of the Organizations and Activists Working on Drug Policy and Health in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, which examined prevalent legal strategies and frameworks utilized by authoritarian regimes in Central Eastern Europe and Central Asia to impede civil society's role in public health improvement, protection of human rights, and the delivery of life-saving harm reduction services. The discussion also showcased the resilience and tenacity exercised by civil society organizations in protecting and maintaining health and human rights services. It was an important discussion, and there were a lot of lessons for human rights activists, harm reduction advocates, and drug policy reformers everywhere, including in the United States. We start with the moderator, Ghana Dovbach, with the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association. She then introduces the first speaker, Daniel Holoy, with Amnesty International.
I'm Ghana Dovbach, Eurasian Harm Reduction Association, and today we will speak about the technologies which are used by some countries and governments to control civil society, to not let civil society to make decisions or to arrest civil society community leaders. And from my perspective, as Eurasian Harm Reduction Association, we are working in 29 countries. And we see how governments are learning of these technologies and some even small tips how to control civil society or media, and we will learn what is happening in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, but my feeling is that a lot of governments all over the globe learning this from our governments. I will give floor to Daniel Holoy from the Amnesty International, and we are very happy to work together on this topic, and I hope that this session will not be the last cooperation in the region and not and all over the globe. I'm passing the mic.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Ghana, and thank you very much to all the organizers for the opportunity to be on this panel. As you say, Ghana, I hope this is the first of many more collaborations. I think this side event comes at a very important moment where civil society organizations and those advocating for drug policy reform are facing increased risks and challenges across the world. But the widespread crackdown that we are seeing over the last few years on the civic space across Eastern Europe and Central Asia is adding an additional layer of concern. This crackdown is clearly being fueled to a large degree by Russia's ongoing war against Ukraine, which is driving hardening authoritarian practices across the region, while older systems of repression still remain. So today I want to focus on some patterns that we have documented at Amnesty, in the region, particularly those obstructing the rights to freedom of association and the right to freedom of expression. While many of the cases that we have documented at Amnesty are not directly related to drug policy, it is clear that those obstacles and those tools for repression are equally hindering the ability of human rights defenders and civil society organizations to promote more humane and rights-respecting drug policies. So I want to highlight three particular strategies that are prevalent in almost every country in the region, albeit to different degrees. I will first talk about the adoption of laws that stigmatize and criminalize civil society organizations and its members, particularly through foreign agents laws. The second strategy that we have documented is the way in which these laws in particular are obstructing the ability of civil society organizations to access funding. And the third one that I will highlight is a trend to further criminalize the right to freedom of expression, particularly through fake news laws and other restrictive policies. So what we have seen is that since Russia first adopted its foreign agents laws over a decade ago, more and more organizations across the region have been constrained or shut down. sadly, Russia's legislation is providing a vicious blueprint for the whole region in which an ever-growing number of individuals and organizations are being labeled as foreign agents or undesirable. These laws are obstructing the work of civil society organizations and directly interfere with the right to association. They are imposing barriers at all stages of the life of an organization, and it's allowing the authorities to monitor and surveil the organizations and its members. This is happening particularly at the point of registration, but it's also happening when organizations plan or conduct their activities, when they seek funds, and when they carry out public campaigning or advocacy. Those who criticize the authorities or who express views at odds with dominant political or social opinions, as we all know is drug policy, are at special risk. All too often, they are forced to self-censor or to scale back their activities, to dedicate their limited resources to defend themselves, or to comply with excessive and bureaucratic requirements. And all too often, they are excluded from funding opportunities. For example, hundreds of organizations in Russia have seen their funding shrink, their reputations tarnished, and their operations closed since the foreign agents law was passed. And we have here the Andrei Rylko Foundation, who will talk more about their experience about this. Many other leading human rights organizations across the region have also been officially dissolved on the pretext of violations of foreign agents' regulations. Just last year, Russia labeled 54 organizations and 172 individuals as foreign agents, and 56 other organizations were designated as undesirable. In similar moves, authorities in Belarus are imposing arbitrary charges of extremism to close civil society organizations, including the prominent human rights center Vyazna. Kyrgyzstan has also unleashed an unprecedented crackdown on civil society organizations with an intensified campaign to stifle all forms of dissent through vaguely defined notions of cultural traditions or national values. Journalists and activists critical of the government are also facing increasing attacks on social media, as well as arbitrary detention and unfair trials. As part of this crackdown, governments across the region are also imposing restrictions on the ability of organizations to seek funds. On the one hand, national sources of funding are generally tied to government priorities, and those able to access are only those who align with the government priorities. Several countries are also imposing legitimate restrictions on the ability to receive funding from abroad, which has forced many organizations to close. Russia's draconian restrictions on foreign funding have been replicated across the region, including in Azerbaijan, Belarus, Kazakhstan, and Tajikistan. Just last week, Kyrgyzstan adopted a new law obliging all organizations who receive funding from abroad and who engage in vaguely defined political activity to register as foreign representatives. If they fail to register as such, the authorities can close this organization for 6 months without a court order or completely deregister the organization. A similar law was recently submitted also by the Georgian government to parliament, but widespread demonstrations from civil society who criticized this law and triggered a massive backlash, forced the government to withdraw and recall the draft. Nevertheless, human rights defenders and other civil society actors in the country still face threats, smears, and harassment. The third issue I wanted to briefly touch upon is the way in which governments are using fake news laws, as I was mentioning, to criminalize those who express critical views or even just for sharing information on human rights. The repression of freedom of expression is spiraling with a barrage of charges ranging from extremism to justification of terrorism, going all the way to dissemination of false information or even LGBTI propaganda. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, censorship is reaching new heights across the region. Azerbaijan, Belarus, Kazakhstan, and Tajikistan, among other countries, have increasingly detained human rights defenders simply for criticizing the government. Also, we documented recently a new law in Kazakhstan, for example, that mandates penalties for social media users and even owners of these platforms simply for unintentionally posting or spreading what they call false information. In Belarus, new amendments to the criminal code allow the authorities to bring criminal charges for what they call crimes of an anti-state orientation. Under these reforms, books and other printed materials can be outlawed for featuring what they call extremist content, while dozens of people have been arrested for subscribing to extremist Telegram channels. Similarly, in Kyrgyzstan, a draft media law intends to outlaw the dissemination of materials that harm the health and morality of the population. Censorship is also running high in Turkmenistan, where the government holds a tight control of information and strictly limits access to the internet. Reporting, even on critical issues like shortages of essential food or medicines, is highly censored. According to one study, more than 120,000 domains were blocked last year alone, including all WordPress blogs, as well as course of news, business, and social media sites. So let me just finalize by saying that under international human rights law, there is no doubt that drug policy activists are human rights defenders. And therefore, states have a clear obligation to protect all human rights defenders and ensure that drug policy activists have a safe and enabling environment in which we can work without fear of reprisals. It is long time for states to start complying with these obligations. And I'll stop there. I know we have very important experiences from the region to hear from, so.
That was Daniel Haloy with Amnesty International speaking on the challenges and response of organizations and activists working on drug policy and health in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, here's Mikhail Golichenko, an attorney with the HIV Legal Network in Toronto, Canada.
My name is Mikhail Golichenko. I am a Russian and Canadian lawyer working for HIV Legal Network based in Toronto, Canada. The recent surge in laws targeting foreign agents across several countries in the Eastern Europe and Central Asia region poses a significant threat to drug policy reforms. Countries such as Russia, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and even Georgia have either implemented or considered implementing such legislation. These laws, ostensibly aimed at safeguarding national sovereignty, have far-reaching implications, particularly for initiatives seeking to reform drug policies towards a more humane and evidence-based approach. Drug policy reforms, which advocate for measures like decriminalization of drug use and possession, alongside improving access to harm reduction and opioid maintenance therapy, are often viewed as foreign concepts by conservative governments in the ECA region. Traditional attitudes lean heavily towards punitive measures and stigmatization of drug users. Thus, any deviation from this punitive approach is often seen as an encroachment of foreign ideals. Civil society organizations and activists championing drug policy reforms become prime target under laws targeting foreign agents. These organizations, often reliant on international support and collaboration, are now forced to navigate a landscape of heightened scrutiny and suspicion. Fearing repercussions, many may resort to self-censorship, effectively halting their advocacy effort altogether. This stifling of civil society undermines the democratic principles these governments claim to uphold. The consequence of such crackdowns on foreign influence is a regression in drug policy reforms. Instead of progressing towards more compassionate and effective approach to drug use, these countries are forced into a narrow corridor of policy options. While some limited efforts may be made towards providing health services and alternatives to incarceration, the overarching stigma and punishment associated with drug use remain largely unchanged. Decriminalization and decarceration efforts are likely to be severely constrained, if not abandoned altogether. The prospect of maintaining stigmatizing policies such as narcological registries persists, further marginalizing individuals struggling with drug dependency. This not only exacerbates public health challenges, but also perpetuates cycles of poverty, discrimination, and incarceration. Moreover, the narrative of foreign interference conveniently deflects attention from domestic issues and fails to address the root causes of drug-related problems. By scapegoating external influences, governments in the Eastern European and Central Asian region evade accountability for failing to implement evidence-based policies that prioritize the well-being of their citizens. The implications extend beyond domestic borders, affecting regional cooperation and global efforts to combat drug trafficking and substance abuse. By alienating international partners and restricting civil society's ability to advocate for reforms, these countries isolate themselves from valuable resources and expertise. In conclusion, laws targeting foreign agents in the Eastern European and Central Asian region represent a significant setback for drug policy reforms. By stifling civil society and perpetuating punitive approaches to drug use, these laws undermine efforts to address substance abuse in a comprehensive and humane manner. Moving forward, it's imperative for governments in the region to prioritize evidence-based policies and meaningful engagement with stakeholders, effectively tackling complex challenges related to drug use.
That was Mikhail Golichenko, an attorney with the HIV Legal Network in Toronto, Canada, speaking on the challenges and response of organizations and activists working on drug policy and health in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, and on today's show, we're listening to portions of a discussion organized by the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association entitled Tenacity in the Shrinking Civic Spaces, Challenges and Response of the Organizations and Activists Working on Drug Policy and Health in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, which examined prevalent legal strategies and frameworks utilized by authoritarian regimes in Central Eastern Europe and Central Asia to impede civil society's role in public health improvement, protection of human rights, and the delivery of life-saving harm reduction services. Let's hear now from Peter Sorosi with the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter.
I don't say I'm happy to speak today here about my unhappy country or that my country joined this group of unhappy countries. When I came here first time at the CND 20 years ago in 2004, my country was freshly joined the European Union and we belong to a group of progressive countries, but at the moment it's the situation completely changed, and unfortunately we are on the same road, or we follow the same script what you could see in Russia, although it's much less harsh. And you know, Hungary is a very small country, but why it can be interesting, it's used as a testing ground for this kind of Russian types anti-NGO policies within the European Union. So what do we mean by a shrinking space of civil society when we speak about the crackdown on civil society in Hungary? We as NGOs, we experience this at several levels. So first, the media space is shrinking for us. So like 10 or 20 years ago, we had plenty of opportunity to speak at the media. Right now, most of the media is controlled by the government, and we don't have any more any kind of opportunities to go to television. And most of the media does not really give a voice to civil society. And some parts of the media actually actively scapegoating NGOs and doing fear-mongering against especially those NGOs who are working with marginalized populations. So at that, another level is the funding space. So there is less and less funding for at least secular-based organizations. The faith-based organizations, different issue. They have plenty of funding. And also the access to international funding is restricted, so that if you receive international funding, you are scapegoated again. There is a shrinking political space, so NGOs are excluded from all kinds of decision-making preparation procedures. And I should mention that we also have so the government creates its own GONGOs, government organizations that are trying to replace NGOs in fields. For example, in the field of drug policy, there is a newly established GONGO in Hungary that is only established to oppose the voice of harm reduction or drug policy reform organizations with very good funding. And there is also a shrinking legal space, so there are repressive new laws and also financial investigations against those organizations that are, let's say, undesirable for the government. This is a short timeline how the crackdown on civil society looked in or started in Hungary. It started in 2013 with a kind of mass media campaign against those NGOs that receive money from international donors, especially George Soros, who's a Hungarian-born philanthropist, creator of the Open Society Foundation. And the absurdity of the situation is that he paid for the stipends of the current Prime Minister of Hungary when he studied in Oxford, and then the Prime Minister turned against him. Then a year after, there was an attack on those organizations that receive funding from the Norway grants. And actually Hungary effectively blocked money coming through the Norway grant to civil society. And the NGO that was distributing these funds in Hungary, there was a financial investigation. Staff member of this organization was arrested, and their tax number was suspended. And the same year, in 2014, we also witnessed an attack or crackdown on harm reduction in Hungary. So the two largest harm reduction programs were shut down. Actually, those needle and syringe programs that provided more than half of the sterile needles in Hungary shut down from 1 week to another, leaving thousands of people use drugs without any kind of access to services. And then in 2017, we had a law we called it foreign agent law. It was modeled after the Russian law, but because we are in the European Union, they could not make it as harsh as in Russia. But the aim was the same, so to scapegoat NGOs and list all those NGOs. So you had to disclaim if you receive money from foreign donors, and then there was a blacklist on a ministry website, and you were put on that, and there was an expected chilling effect of that. And in 2018, the Central European University, which is a private university, was forced out from Hungary, and it left Hungary to Vienna. And we also had an anti-LGBTQ law that was also directed against civil society, because it banned civil society organizations from going to school to do drug prevention and sex education. And still, it's now it's only faith-based organizations and the police is allowed to go to schools, and there is a complete ban on talking about LGBTQ issues in schools. So the Florida Say No Gay law that was modeled after this Hungarian one. So that's an example how a small country like Hungary can be a cheerleader of this kind of conservative movements around the world. And the newest development was end of last year, they created a new authority, a sovereign defense authority, which is protecting the sovereignty of Hungary and aiming to monitor and investigate all those NGOs that serve foreign interests. And of course, they decide who is those organizations, probably us included. So I would like to recommend you to read a report and see or watch a video on the shrinking space for civil society in our region. It was the report is called "We Fight, We Hide, We Unite," and we also made a video, the crackdown on civil society. If you search on YouTube, you will find it with several interviews, and it's pretty interesting stories about how NGOs live this in everyday life. So this report identified, actually, and I think that's a very good categorization, that it identified three types of response from civil society responding to this crackdown. And one, the first is like fighting, so those NGOs who are opposing the government. Then some of NGOs, and there are, I think, much more NGOs who are hiding. They are kind of abandoning all kind of public advocacy. Let's, be invisible, just doing our services. We don't speak to the media, this type of attitude. And then there is the unite attitude, when they try to make a compromise with the authorities. And a good example in Hungary is that some organization, harm reduction organizations, reframed their work as recovery, and they don't allow, they are not allowed to speak about harm reduction. They use some resources to do harm reduction, but they never speak about it, because if you submit any grant application to the government, you should not mention the word harm reduction, needle, or nothing like that, because you will not receive any kind of money. So about how we try to fight back, my organization was one of those who were fighting back. For example, in 2014, when there was an attack against harm reduction programs, we organized a campaign in Budapest for harm reduction. We were going to the streets, had a petition. We used all kinds of platforms to promote harm reduction. We also used some legal channels of complaint, like the Ombudsman for Fundamental Rights, who actually condemned the closure of the needle and syringe programs in Hungary as the as a violation of the right to health and the right to healthy environment for people who are living around. Which was a big win. And also sometimes in this growing authoritarianism or countries with growing authoritarianism, sometimes you find allies in the local level. So in if you still have some local municipalities who are still a bit more liberal or progressive. So if you could, for example, we could cooperate with the Budapest municipality and created last year a very progressive drug strategy, at least for Budapest, with some local level funding. So that was a good opportunity. And also I think one opportunity to fight back is also if you coordinate civil society activities. So I mean, that is a kind of unintended benefit of this crackdown on NGOs, that we are more organized than ever, like the civil society itself. So we have some networks and we really act collectively. There was also a huge demonstration for civil society in Budapest. We had a strategic litigation case, and in 2020, the Court of Justice of the European Union actually annulled the law, the foreign agent law, and it was repealed in Hungary. So that was, I think, a big success. It will be replicated in another form, but it also shows that in the European Union still you can't do the same as in Russia, for example. There are still some kind of rule of law. At the same time, I'm not very happy with how the European Union responding to these violations. I think these mechanisms should be used much, it could be used much more. And finally, I would like to recommend you a report we published with the Civil Society Forum on Drugs. That's an advisory body for the European Commission. It's about the quality standards of civil society involvement in drug policies. It is a kind of guideline for both decision makers and civil society about what do we mean by a meaningful involvement? How you can, you know, give a content or substance to this word meaningfully involved. So I recommend you to read that report and use it in your own countries. And the final word is that I think policymaking should not be the privilege of a political class. There is no democracy without a vibrant civil society, and freedom of association, as Daniel also mentioned, is a very key human right, and we cannot have any progress in drug policy without guaranteeing that right. Thank you very much.
That was Peter Cerosi with the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter, speaking on a panel organized by the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association entitled Tenacity in the Shrinking Civic Spaces, Challenges and Response of the Organizations and Activists Working on Drug Policy and Health in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, that examined prevalent legal strategies and frameworks utilized by authoritarian regimes in Central and Eastern Europe and in Central Asia to impede civil society's role in public health improvement, protection of human rights, and the delivery of life-saving harm reduction services. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.